Welcome to Technogram, the LinkedIn's podcast channel where we highlight interesting stories from the tech world. Today, we're excited to welcome Rehan Shahid, an enterprise account manager and technology advisor from Hitachi Vantara, who is changing how businesses use technology. He blends current trends with innovative solutions, covering areas like cloud services, smart cities, and big data analytics. Join us as we discuss how strategic tech decisions drive success and what it takes to lead large-scale IT initiatives. Welcome, Rehan, to Technogram. Very happy to have you here.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? How did you come in the tech industry?
I mean, coming in the tech industry was a blast kind of a story, right? So I started in a telco, and I was put in a position which I had no idea about.
Okay.
So usually all the data is kept on a storage system,
mm-hmm.
right? And then there are also the backups that you take in order to be safe from any, you know, for business continuity and these kind of things. So I was put into that role, and the first day when I joined, my previous guy who was managing all of that resigned.
Okay.
Yeah. And because he was going into a competitive company, telco, there was no notice period.
Right.
So it was the same day, same hour, you know, he had to leave the offices.
Right. And so there was no time for a handover.
There was no handover. All I was told was there are like 25 documents.
Right.
And each document was like 300 to 500 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is anything, you can find it in this document. That was my handover.
And how old were you at this point?
At that time, I was 21 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was 21 years old.
Right.
And then, you know, then what happened the very next day was one of the mission critical systems, which is in a telco, it's the billing system.
Right.
Right. When you call and you get your postpaid bill, and so that system calculates all of your bills and, you know, everything. So the billing system went down.
Okay.
Yeah. And that this is the next day.
Okay? And apart from you, nobody else knows what can be done.
Even I don't know.
Even you don't
know. Because it's my first. Yeah. Like now it's my second day, right?
Yeah.
So, and I find myself sitting on my desk with the PC and the screen in front of me, and I'm trying to restore and, you know, check things. And then I find behind me six of the most senior people in the organization.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so imagine I'm under this pressure now.
Yes.
And I'm the only one who has to now restore from that backups, mm-hmm. in order to come back so that, you know, we are able to, you know, run the system again. And all of those guys are standing behind me, including the IT manager, the IT director, the CIO, okay? And because they're getting calls.
Yeah.
They're getting calls from everywhere, from the business, from the call centers, from the other side as well. So, and I'm sitting there, they're standing behind me, and I'm like, in a pressure, okay? If this doesn't work, you have your work, or you're fired.
It was that type of a situation,
make or break thing. So luckily, it, you know, it was a good day, so everything worked fine, and we were able to restore and then run the whole environment again.
Was it a possibility where you had to, where you could rely on an external party, like a partner or anything like that?
Absolutely, I could, but so that was not under their scope.
Right.
Right. So they would set up those storage systems and the backup systems, right? But it was not their scope in order to take the backup and restore from that, you know, as well. That's a customer's job. So at that time when I was in a telco as a customer, it's your job,
right?
Okay, and it's your ownership, your responsibility. So that's how kind of I entered into my career.
So somehow you pulled through. Somehow you figured it out.
Somehow I figured it out. Somehow it worked.
Did you have to refer to the 500 plus manual pages?
I did have to, but but it's also difficult, you know, because you don't know the pages itself, right?
You haven't
read it.
Where do you look?
Where do you look and how do you look? So, but eventually everything restored, the system came up, the billing system came up, everybody was okay. And, you know, sometimes when these things happen,
yeah,
somewhere there lies an opportunity as well for you.
For sure.
Right? As a career. So from that day, you know, everybody knew who I was, everybody would know my name, everybody, you know, it was kind of, you become a hero from an IT perspective.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah, so that was how my, you know, career started with the bank. But now when I see back, right, I enjoyed it. I think so.
Yeah. When you always look behind, it's like a really smooth and a good story to tell as well.
It is. It is always a good story, and it's something that I never forget. You know, so it's that kind of a moment. But yeah, I mean, I loved it.
So how long were you there with that telco?
So I worked there for like 2 years.
Okay.
Okay. So in those roles, and then I moved to. Like in an organization called EMC.
Mm-hmm.
So EMC.
In an organization called EMC, of course we know EMC.
All right. So at that time they were just entering, you know, the market.
Right.
In that particular place. So, and it happened that my role initially it started as a funded head,
mm-hmm.
so which is like two companies are paying for you.
Got it. Yes.
Okay. And then just after 6 months of that role, I went to directly to EMC. So from a co-funded to a fully,
right.
you know, full employee at EMC.
Mm-hmm.
I joined as a technology consultant or
okay.
pre-sales,
mm-hmm.
right? So people who actually work on solutions and design solutions. I love that, right? So I love to design and, you know, build and solve problems. And at that time, I was like 23 years old.
Okay.
And I was the youngest pre-sales technology consultant worldwide. So that
for
was
EMC at that point.
For EMC, yeah. Usually you become a consultant after maybe 10, 12, 13 years, you know, of your
right.
experience. But that was something which really was an amazing, amazing thing. So, yeah, then I worked in EMC, enjoyed a lot, had some wonderful wins, had some wonderful time. And then after 5 years working there, I decided to move and leave the country.
Okay.
So I came in Saudi,
okay.
right, and Bahrain. So then in Saudi and Bahrain, we won a massive, massive project for storing data
mm-hmm.
in an oil and gas organization.
Okay.
Right, so I can't take the name, but you can guess, it's
yes.
the world's biggest
yeah.
oil and gas organization. So I ended up working there
mm-hmm.
With a partner. Okay, so we won that contract, and that was with my current, you know, company, which is Hitachi. So we pitched that, and then we were awarded from this customer, and that was again an amazing experience. You know, if you have somebody like that on your CV
yeah.
and you've managed that customer as an enterprise account manager, which is the world's largest organization,
sure.
it really gives you a different perspective, right?
So it sets you apart, right? It gives you that level up as well.
Exactly, yeah. So I did that for like directly in that role for like 7 years. And then I was then going to go back, leave everything.
Yes.
But that was like 2019.
Right.
And when I was leaving, then my current employer, which is Hitachi, they approached me directly.
Okay.
Okay. In fact, one or two others were also approaching, but I had other plans, and I said, but, you know, people in Hitachi said, like, you know, this is something which is good and everything. I said, okay, you know, let's give it a shot. So then I joined Hitachi. Again, in the same role to manage this customer as an enterprise account manager, but for Hitachi, working in Hitachi.
Got it.
Okay.
So now how long have you been with Hitachi?
Now it's been more than 5 years.
Okay.
You've
moved countries within Hitachi.
Right. So then a big, you know, change in everybody's life happened, which was the COVID period.
Yes.
Right. So it was... bit of a struggle for everybody, including us
mm-hmm.
as an organization. So a lot of restructuring happened, and then I worked. So I was living in Saudi. Sorry, I was working in Saudi, living in Bahrain.
Okay.
Okay. So that was a mixed kind of a culture. But
do you mean that you are you commuting?
Yeah.
On a daily basis.
Yeah, yeah. So they, in Bahrain and Uber, it's like
1 hour, I think.
It's a bridge on the water.
Right, right,
right. Which they call as causeway.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So a lot of people use it to go from Bahrain to Saudi and then coming back as well. So I did that for close to 9 years to
so
10 years.
How long is that drive?
When it's no traffic, it was around 45 minutes, 50
okay.
minutes,
okay.
door to door. Okay, because you need to go through the immigration process.
Right,
also,
yeah, exiting the country. Basically.
Exiting the country,
yeah.
re-entering the country. And then it's also that you have to do it in your car.
Right.
Right. So it's not that you're going out of the car.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the car and then you're in the line. So in those days, sometimes when on the peak period, it could take 3 hours as well. You're just sitting in the car.
Waiting. Yeah.
And waiting. You know, watching some of the, you know, stand-up comedies and Kapil Sharma stuff.
Right.
So... but then it went smooth. They added more, you know,
mm-hmm.
counters. Then it came down 45 minutes, 50 minutes. So that was a lovely time. And a lot of people who have done this, you know,
yeah.
we somehow it just instantly connects with everybody.
Right.
Oh, I've done that too. You know, I've been to the causeway and I used to do up and down
yeah.
all the time. So that was great. So then in 2023, my role changed. So instead of looking at the one particular customer, my role changed to a what we call as a channel role, right? So where instead of taking care of the customer directly, you take care of all of your partners and distribution and alliances. Okay, so that also happened with kind of a bang, right? So because we had now very less resources,
right.
all of a sudden I was managing the whole region.
Okay.
Yeah, so... So I became the head for the Middle East region for channel and distribution, which is like 8, 10, 12 countries in
right.
the Middle East. So with that came a lot of traveling. So before I was traveling on the car from Bahrain to
yeah.
Saudi, now it was in an aeroplane.
Yeah.
So
amazing.
Every,
yeah, amazing.
Every 2 weeks.
Rehan, you've had
yeah.
a lot of, you've had a great story so far. You've had a lot of ups and downs and great
yeah.
to have you here. So. Can you tell us a little bit about Hitachi Vantara? What is their main focus of business? So for people who may not know, I'm sure everybody does, but in again, an overview of
okay.
what the company does.
Well, I'll try to do this quickly. Okay, in order to understand Hitachi Vantara, we need to understand our mother company, which
mm-hmm.
is Hitachi Limited.
Okay.
Right, so Hitachi Limited was born in 1910.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so it's more than 110 years old, and I don't know many brands which are still 110 years old and working, just maybe a handful. And so Hitachi Limited started by building compressors and motors, right? So that's how they started, and then they went into rails, and slowly a lot of other groups opened. And I was surprised to know there were so many things we pioneered
mm-hmm.
as Hitachi Limited. So the first railway control station, you
mm-hmm.
know, that control room was built by Hitachi. The RFID that
right.
we all use was, you know, Hitachi was one of the main pioneers of the RFID technology. So they did many, many wonderful things. So they have like 850 subsidiaries across all different areas. So which is, they also have home appliances
mm-hmm.
that, you know, we use every day at our home. That's a division called Hitachi Living Systems. And then we also have things like Hitachi Rail, right? So the, you know, the Etihad Rail project?
Yes.
Which is Abu Dhabi
yeah.
and connecting all the Emirates.
Mm-hmm.
So that Etihad Rail project is actually Hitachi.
They're
building it,
mm-hmm.
right? So Hitachi Rail is doing that. And also, if you know the Palm, the
mm-hmm.
tram?
Yes.
So that was also
Hitachi. Okay.
So that's like one of the divisions as well. So then there's Hitachi Energy, which is working in oil and gas and utilities, electricity and water. And so Vantara is what we call as the IT arm of Hitachi Limited.
Okay.
So we come under somebody known as Hitachi Digital.
Okay.
So under Hitachi Digital, we have Hitachi Vantara, we have Hitachi Digital Services, which
mm-hmm.
is consulting.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if you want to do a smart city project, you can't bring in, you know, equipment and it will start working. So you need to first work certain on a consulting engagement to understand and, you know, plan. So that's the Hitachi Digital Services. And then we have a third one called Global Logic. So Global Logic is actually, you know, around 50,000 plus engineers, software development. And we've done some wonderful stuff with Global Logic. For example, you know, the Emirates flight entertainment system.
Yes.
That was done by Global Logic.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
It's great to kind of put that together.
Yeah. So especially for this, you know, our region, we love Emirates, right? So
yeah.
I love to fly Emirates. I don't know why, but there is some,
yeah,
you know, something it connects. So that flight entertainment system was done by us in part of my sister company, which is Global Logic. Also the McDonald's.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they had a problem that, you know, they had long queues.
Mm-hmm.
At their McDonald's outlets. So they had this challenge that, you know, how do we solve this? So they said, okay, we're going to have kiosks.
Self-checkout
on the outlet itself.
Okay.
Right? So instead of people going in the line, you could go to the kiosk and, you know, place your order. So that entire solution was also done by...
Only for McDonald's? Because I think a lot of retailers now have that.
There are many more, yeah. But, you know, our story with Global Logic with McDonald's is the biggest one. It was done globally.
I see.
Right? So, some interesting things around that space. So, Hitachi Vantara focuses on the infrastructure space.
Okay.
Of course, we are known as the Rolls Royce of storage, storing data, because of our reliability.
Yeah.
Right? So, it is extremely, extremely reliable. In fact, I'll give you a story. In one of our customers, it was a bank. So suddenly, there was fire in the data center.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, now you can imagine the, you know, the heat is going up. Everything is going up, 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 up. All systems screaming, boom, boom, you know, sounds and everything. And only Hitachi system kept running. And this is as per the customer.
Right.
Okay. So this is a kind of reliability. You know, this the we're talking about, so that's why we're very, very famous around that space. But then we went into a lot of other things like cloud solutions, especially around hybrid cloud. Now we're, you know, taking the global market by storm around AI as well.
Okay.
So that's something that, you know, we're really working very closely with the market. In order to help, you know, with the AI part as well.
Okay, that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
So you mentioned cloud is also something that you are now diversified into, right? One of my questions that I was thinking about is, when enterprises want to move from legacy systems to cloud infrastructure, they do face a lot of significant challenges.
Yeah.
So what do you think are the three elements that they should keep in mind to ensure the transition is smooth? And how can they typically overcome the common pitfalls?
Right. First thing which I would suggest is that spend as much time as you can in the planning. Right. What I've seen customers and you know, a lot of people do is that they do it too far quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They think, okay, I've made everything, I've prepared everything here to be able to migrate, and I've prepared everything in the cloud. Right. My landscape is ready. The whole thing is ready. Oh, okay. I can just move now. So
it doesn't work that
way. It doesn't really. Then you have so many issues, right? So what my suggestion always is that spend time into planning your migration properly, right? So we have to make sure, do some tests, even, you know, do some drills before you actually start migrating and running your environment totally in the cloud. That's one of the main things. But interestingly, this is where we can help as well. We can help speed up that journey.
Okay.
Okay. So with our consulting services, we can help move from an on-prem to the cloud pretty fast. But interestingly, what's happening is now the hybrid cloud has become mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be surprised to know that the public cloud is around, I would say, 20% plus minus of the cloud market.
Yeah.
Which is, we always think, oh, everything is cloud, right? But that's an interesting fact. You know, it's only around 20%.
There's still a long way to go.
Still a long way, but what because there are so many customers that don't want to move to the cloud. There are so many customers who have moved to the cloud, but they're facing challenges because it's expensive. You know, when you look at 3 to 5 years, it is expensive, right? The whole TCO. So now everybody is looking at what we call as hybrid cloud, right? So there would be some part of your environment and applications running in your environment, which is on-premise, and there will be some part running in the cloud. Now, all of these big cloud providers, the hyperscalers, we work with them very closely, okay? So the likes of AWS, the likes of Microsoft Azure, and yeah. Google, yeah. GCP. So if you notice, what they've done is, they've also built an on-prem version.
Okay.
Yeah. So, because of course, they also realize that a lot of data has to be kept on-prem because the customer wants control over it, you know.
The residency issues.
Exactly, everything. So they, if you look at Azure, Microsoft Azure, they built Azure Stack, mm-hmm. right? Azure Stack is the on-prem version of Azure. Similarly, AWS has an on-prem version called Outpost, and Google has an on-prem version called Google Anthos. So now we are seeing that there will be kind of a rebalancing, or there's another word which we call as data repatriation, which means a lot of that data will be coming back from the public cloud on-prem as well, but still in a hybrid cloud
module. Okay.
Right. So that, you know, again, the big hyperscalers understand this very well. And the way they have also led the public cloud market, they're also very, very strongly leading the hybrid cloud market. And that's where, as Hitachi also, we have a very strong, convergence with the hyperscalers plus Hitachi Vantara, because we help build that hybrid cloud environment, which is on-prem and in the cloud,
okay.
which gives customers the ability to move.
Right.
Whenever they want to move from on-prem to cloud to on-prem, so they can, you know, have that amazing flexibility. And it's not just for one cloud hyperscaler,
yeah.
but now they're thinking about multi-cloud.
Right.
Like they might have something running in AWS, they might have something running in Azure, maybe something running in Google GCP.
It's important to have the multi-cloud tenants.
Exactly,
well.
Exactly, absolutely. So that's something where, we've worked very closely globally as well with these hyperscalers. And I think that's where now all of the enterprise customers are looking at as well.
Right. Yeah. You know, Rehan, in the beginning of the conversation, you spoke about how you used to be more customer facing.
Yeah.
And now you're partner or distribution and partner facing.
Yeah.
Channel, exactly.
Yeah, correct.
Right? So what do you think is one of the key differences that you have seen in the way you need to approach things from what you used to handle and now what you handle when it comes to emerging technologies?
Well, I'm a strong believer that channel is the right approach to the market, right? So for every big vendor, I think there are multiple reasons,
mm-hmm.
right? So the first one is that the channel is the constant in all of this game. Right, so you have a customer, then you have a partner, or you know, in terms of partner and distribution, and then you have the vendor. Right, so on the vendor side, you would find that things are very dynamic, you know, in the sense that things change, technologies and all of those things, new technologies come, people change, you know, people go. But on the channel side, the channel organization is already in a relationship with the customer for a long time, right? So maybe they'll have a 5-year contract, maybe they'll have longer, maybe have something like this. So channel is a constant in this game. So working, enabling, empowering the channel is the right, you know, approach, it's the right strategy. This is what I strongly believe. And that gives you also as you know, one of the major manufacturers in globally, that also gives you a good confidence that if you're working closely with the channel, you know, you obviously have a good reach to the end customers as well.
Okay.
So I think so channel is always you know, like a strong touch with the end customer as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So and that's something which as Hitachi as well, we're going to continue to do.
Yeah. So do you see that the partners need to define they need to redefine their business models going forward?
So I think when it comes to hybrid cloud and AI, you know, I think it is more of from a partner business model perspective, it's more of understanding and learning what you want to do, right? What is the problem you're trying to solve for the end customer? What are the use cases that you want to work on? So that's something which, you know, most of the channel partners as well as distribution, they are constantly now, you know, trying to develop, because everybody can give an infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's not a huge difference, but what is the actual problem you're trying to solve? What is the actual use case you're trying to solve?
Yeah.
Is what, you know, all the channel now, you know, of course, need to focus and keep learning. So that's something which is important.
Okay. You mentioned AI. I'll come back to that.
Okay.
But before that, big data and analytics are also kind of transforming all industries. Is there any example that you can tell us how big data and analytics have made a difference in any of the verticals? Is there anything that you can share as an example?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So we've done some things around, you know, a lot of different verticals. But I can give you something in transport, which is rail. So we have this, you know, a transport organization, railway organization, and the problem they had was parking.
Okay.
Yeah, interestingly.
Interesting.
So parking, so whenever like trains would come.
Are you able to reveal which country this was in?
Yeah, this is in Luxembourg.
Okay.
Right, so one of our key railway customers. And so they had one use case, second use case, third use case, fifth use case, multiple use cases running, but they were all running differently.
Right.
Right. So there was, they didn't have that understanding about their data. So what we did was we looked at all the data and we kind of consolidated it into one big data environment and analytics platform. And then we were able to find out and help where that customer was now able to tell all the passengers what time the parking would be 90% full, right? When is a good time to come in order to, you know, find some parking? And if you're reaching at, let's say if the train leaves at 2 p.m. and if you're reaching at 1:58, at that time, the parking would be 98.3% full.
Interesting. So parking at the railway station when they come.
Exactly. So parking at the railway station, which is you know, a bit.
Yeah.
So this was something where we looked at the data, we understood the whole patterns, we did some engineering on the data, and then we were able to get those analytics out. And you know, now that railway Luxembourg, you know, they were able to communicate this to the passengers so they could plan better.
And this helped with the operational efficiency as well?
Absolutely, because it was all messed up, you know, originally.
Mm-hmm.
And now they could, all the passengers who were coming, they could plan better in the sense that, okay, what time they should be there, how do they, you know, not miss trains,
yeah.
You know, because that was one of the challenges.
They're looking for parking,
Looking for parking, right? You miss your, the train. And this can be applied here as well,
mm-hmm.
right? So we have many situations where we're not able to find parking, like just today it happened.
Yeah, as you came today.
So
how many hours did you take again?
So it's good to know that, you know, the situation in terms of how can you find it. You can in the malls as well.
Yeah,
you know, we have.
So has this been extended to regionally?
Well, we're speaking at the moment. So it's in, you can say, hopefully on the way. But
right.
It hasn't happened as yet, but yes, conversations are happening.
Okay. So you spoke about AI earlier.
Yeah.
And we know that AI has the potential to significantly transform all the industries, right? But can you tell us in what are the ways in which AI is already impacting business outcomes? And how do you, what are, where do you see the opportunities going forward?
Well, I think, you know, if you go back a little, AI has been there since a long time, right? So 20 years or so. And what has changed is Gen AI, right? So that has really changed everything in the past 2-3 years. So AI was there. For example, we were, you know, what's the difference between AI and Gen AI? You know, let's quickly talk about that. So with AI, you use it for certain, like you have your data, you train the system, but you use it to get some answers, to make some decisions, for example, right? If you look at a chess game, you train the chess game to make certain decisions, right? That's AI. Or you can use AI to do better reporting, you know, get better answers or results, right? But what's Gen AI is that you train the system, you give it certain inputs or prompts, and it gives you a new PowerPoint presentation, for example, okay? Or it gives you a new essay, a new article,
right?
So the important thing
here is... It generates.
Exactly. The important word here is new, right? So Gen AI, which generates, right,
yeah,
as you said perfectly, is something that was not happening before. So all of a sudden, I just give it certain inputs and it writes a full email for me. Right?
So it's already making an impact in how we are doing things.
In everything, right? So it's like, that's a new content. Okay, so that's why it has become mainstream suddenly. And, you know, in the past 3 years, especially with ChatGPT leading the way. So this really kind of helped speed up individual tasks, all those repetitive human tasks that we used to do. And a lot of people fear that, okay, it's going to take my job. But actually, it's, you know, in my opinion, it's not going to take job. It's going to make more jobs. Why? Because at the end of the day, accuracy and check is your responsibility.
And at this point in time, it's not accurate. You can ask it questions and it does give you answers, but you have to double check everything.
So the challenge of any AI, because when you talk about AI, you talk about huge amounts of data or large language models, the accuracy of data is always going to be a challenge, right? So, for example, ChatGPT is not good in maths, right? If you ask a mathematical question, right, it will give you answers, but there would be errors as well, you know, elsewhere, because that's how it is trained. But it's good when you use it to create a PowerPoint or an article or these kind of things. So how do you train and how do you maintain the data accuracy is the key. So important thing here is how do we make use of AI, right? And Gen AI especially. So if it can give me an article in 3 minutes, it's amazing. But do I want to publish that article as is? Absolutely no.
Right.
So our jobs would kind of transform into creating those repetitive tasks to rather making sure that the article that has been prepared is what I want, right? And so then you make changes accordingly in that article and you make it the way you want to look, you know, make it look like. So that's kind of a bit of a shift. So it's not that, you know, we're going to lose our jobs and we're going to go home and, you know.
Yeah.
So these kind of things will never
happen. But besides Gen AI, is there any other aspect of AI that is kind of making an impact?
Gen AI, especially in the enterprise AI world, is the main thing that, you know, we want to talk about. So how would banks use it?
Exactly.
How would telcos use it? How would education, you know, universities use it. So we have implemented use cases with banking sectors where we're also trying to automate, for example, the loan lending process, right? So right now you're able to open an account with clicks, or you want to order a new credit card, you can do it with few clicks. But can you do that for a loan? You cannot, right? So like an auto loan or a house or a personal loan. So that's one of the things, you know, automating with Gen AI your loan lending process. Plus, how do you detect fraud, right? So when you swipe your, when you put your card at a touch machine, within milliseconds, it goes through 20 checks. Right. Is it really you? How much balance you have? What is your account number? What's the request you're asking? Does it exceed your limit? Not, you know, all of these things, 20, at least 20 checks it has to go through.
Mm.
And that's something again, which, you know, Gen AI is also revolutionizing as we go forward, because fraud detection has become major, major thing in banking, right? So that's again transforming, you know, banking industry. In education, there's certain interesting use cases where you can design your course on the fly.
Interesting.
Yeah, so usually what happens when both you and I went to a university,
mm-hmm.
right? So we knew, okay, this is the course title, and this is what we're gonna, you know, study in the course. The teacher,
it's static, it doesn't change.
Static, exactly,
really,
exactly. But technology these days and trends these days, whatever you do marketing, you don't do finance, it's changing so fast, it's difficult to keep up.
Right.
And if you're in a four-year program, by the time you started, at the end of four-year program, you're 4 years still back.
Right.
Right? Because so much would have changed.
Exactly.
So what now with Gen AI, you can change the course on the fly.
Right.
Right? You can adjust based on the trends and stuff that is happening. What is the most relevant thing for the students?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it also helps give, because usually it's not easy to change in the middle, because how would you as a teacher, of course, you know, prepare yourself as well, because during the course you don't have enough time. But that's where Gen AI has come in. Right? So it has really helped design courses as well in the education sector. So that's again one of the use cases where it's really changing.
Some interesting use cases there. When organizations are investing in technology or IT, how do they make it such that they're able to ensure that what they're spending money on is relevant today, as well as it's easily scalable and adaptable for the future? How do they ensure business continuity and ensure that the investments are relevant even in the future?
That's a very good question. Plus, it's not an easy question to answer, right? So investing in anything, we have to divide this into different areas. When you invest in infrastructure, which is hardware, usually your life cycle is, let's say, 5 to 7 years. Okay. After 5 to 7 years, it will go end of life and you need to get a new set of hardware for you, right? But when we talk about like, there are different categories, right? So when you talk about, let's say, a middleware application, right, that runs for, I would say, 7 to 10 years, the life cycle for that. If you talk about an application, a business application, right, it could be core banking,
mm-hmm.
it could be anything in any environment, the lifespan for an application is between 8 to 12 to 15 years.
Right.
Okay. So, from a business continuity perspective, you want to invest in something which is not locked, which is open, right? Which is built on a technology that is available across the community, right? Kind of an open source thing. Okay, so yes, of course, there are platforms and applications that are designed to do certain tasks, which is always going to be there, but if it's built on an open platform, the better it is. Yeah, so you don't get kind of locked in.
Got it.
However, of course, the data is growing tremendously. It is a data conversation, to be honest, and every customer wants to manage their data in the best way. You know, and this is a challenge, which is an everyday challenge even with us as individuals, as organizations, as governments, managing data is a challenge. I mean, if I look at individually, if I look at my phone, right, the memory gets full. So you get so much of content, WhatsApp, there is website, there is so many applications now. It's difficult to manage your individual data as well.
Yes, imagine for an enterprise then.
Exactly. But the thing here is, do you actually delete your data?
Yeah.
And, as an organization, if you delete something which you needed, you don't want to be in that position.
So you end up keeping it all.
You end up keeping it all, right? Plus, there's new data coming every day.
Yeah.
So all of this huge data growth, plus you're not deleting your previous data, it's an everyday challenge for everybody. You only delete it once you know what's there, right? So for example, if there's a meme that's on your phone, you've read it, but you want to delete it after 1 week. You'll do it because you know what's in it, right? You've read it, you know it. So in a big organization where you have petabytes and petabytes of data, it's difficult to know the data. It's difficult to know what's in that file. How are you going to look at those petabytes of data individually and then start, deleting? That's difficult. And that's where we can help as well, right? As us, as Hitachi, where we help classify it. We help identify what's the data, what's the importance of the data.
Through AI technology.
It's a bit of AI, but a lot of it has to do with classifying the data when it's created.
Right. Putting the labels when it's...
labels, exactly, and then putting it in the right place as well.
Yeah.
Setting the right policies around it. So that helps a bit, but managing data is actually everybody's problem.
Yeah.
So it's more of, I like to look at it this way, that instead of, when we talk about business continuity, I like to look at it this way, that it's really about managing your data and, having that data continuity, right? The data operations, that's the main, I would say, challenge that we're all working to solve together.
I absolutely agree. Thank you so much, Rehan, for your time today. Some great stories, and
thank
we will
you.
Really enjoy talking to you.
Thank you so much, and pleasure to be here.
Hope to speak to you soon again.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.